afternoon, and thank you for standing by. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's RIA Subteam B call on Tuesday, the 26th of January. We have Steve Mallett, Michaela Nalon, Tatiana Kramtsova, Holly Rage, Siva Mutuzami, Paul Diaz, Cheryl Langdonor. From staff, we have Margie Milam, David Giesler, and myself, Giesler Gruber-White. We have apologies from Christina Rosette, from Mark Trachtenberg. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Gisela. And is there anybody on the call that wasn't named in that list? Okay. If not, why don't we proceed? I think we have two agenda items on this call. The first is to review the proposed timetable for the rest of our work that I was asked to prepare on the last call and that was circulated a couple days ago. So we should see if we can come to agreement on that. And then the next item is to plunge back into our master chart, which I think Margie has updated yet again. And I believe we're about to start on item 9.4. So we can start there with our two tasks. One is to determine whether it's a high or low priority, and the other is it an issue on which we have to flag some consensus policy concern. Are there any other agenda items that people wanted to bring up today? If not, let's go ahead with the timetable, which I think everyone has seen. I work backwards from the revised council meeting date, which was April 21st, and I believe the date by which anything would have to be submitted to be ripe on that agenda is April 7th. I'm sure the staff will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm at least within a day or two, I think. So working back from there, I just laid out the tasks that we have remaining. There was people's feeling was we should continue through the chart and not have a parallel effort to work on recommendations for next steps. I try to keep to a biweekly schedule, and I did that except for one of the bye weeks turned out to be the week of March 8th, which is the week of the ICANN meeting in Nairobi. So on the supposition that I know some of our members will be there and be traveling there, I suggested we meet either the week before that or the week after that. So that means, inevitably there will be a meeting 2 weeks in a row on one occasion. So that's the proposal, and the floor is open for comments or questions about this proposed timetable.
I'm happy with it.
Okay. Hearing no objection, can we consider that approved? Holly wants to be recognized, I think.
No. I'm just saying I'm happy with
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think. I'm sorry about that. You don't need to do the. I mean, you can do the Adobe Connect hand, or else just speak up. We're a small enough group if you want to be recognized. Okay. If there's no objection, then we'll take that as approved and work from there. I will mention one other thing that we might want to feed in here at some point is toward the end of the process is. In some cases, we've had questions about, what would the contract language look like to deal with some of these topics, and it may be that the staff could provide us with some language on that at various points. Again, our job is not really to negotiate contract language, but if people are unclear and don't know what it would look like in contract language, then perhaps the staff could provide something along that line. But I think we can fit that into our existing timetable, so I'm not sure we need a separate entry for that. If there's no further discussion on that, why don't we Margie has her hand up. Margie, go ahead.
About the contract language, if you could give us some guidance on what you're thinking about. Would you want language for high priority, medium priority items? Just, you know, give us direction on how, you know, what kind of language you'd like from us, and we'll go ahead and take care of it.
Okay. We can deal with that either as we go along or else on a priority basis. I mean, I assume that the high priority is of more interest than the low priority. You know, if there's some unclarity about the low priority, it's probably less significant, but I think we can proceed on that basis. Okay, so let's turn back then to the chart. Margie did circulate an update, and I think it's correct that we've gotten through 9.3. I don't know if people have any questions about, you know, what's in the chart up to 9.3, you know, in terms of whether it's accurately transcribed, what we decided as far as high or low priority and so forth, certainly bring that up now. But failing that, maybe we should just start ahead with 9.4. There are actually three, I guess there are three proposals under 9.4. Two of them really have to do with the form of business organization of a registrar and providing that information to ICANN. And then the third one there actually is about any change to certain facts about the registrar, where it's located, presiding officer, bankruptcy filing, and so forth. So I guess those two are similar, but not exactly the same. Are there any comments on any of those proposals and any view on whether that's a high priority topic to be dealt with in the RAA or a low priority? Michaela, anybody else want to be recognized?
When we had that rather helpful meeting with law enforcement, they clarified a couple of these points. They don't think there was no kind of comeback on that. But I gathered from what he was saying that a couple of the points that I raised were subject to some clarification on their end or something like that. And just because there were a couple of things, like the 9.4 law enforcement, clarifying within the country of operation, because that wasn't very clear.
Right.
The other one is 9.4, the legal civil actions. I mean, we all agreed that if Steve happened to be in my office and broke his ankle, it wouldn't really be pertinent for ICANN to know that.
Yeah.
This was totally irrelevant. So
right.
Just on the record, that, you know, that there were a couple of things here that I think needed to be clarified a small bit. It was in their current form, they're a bit slow.
I think you're absolutely right as far as when we went through this with Bobby Flame.
Yeah. That's all.
Okay. Other comments on this? Do we think this is a high priority or? Go ahead. Holly, was that?
Yeah, just a question. It seems to me then that this has been clarified that you could look probably through all of 9.4.
Mm-hmm.
Did the law enforcement agency see this as critical?
I think so. I mean, I don't know exactly how they would. I don't want to speak for them, but I got that sense.
Michaela, what was your impression of the discussion?
Well, my impression of the discussion was I thought it was very, very useful. I mean, that, you know, law enforcement understand that I can only speak for myself. I cannot possibly attempt to speak for other people within the registrar community, so that's clear. But, you know, the thing is, from my perspective as a registrar, I don't have an issue with what they're trying to do. in most instances, as long as it is recorded somewhere that, for example, the country of operation bit there, that is clarified, that the legal civil actions bit either be clarified and specifically pertinent to the services the registrar is providing, or that it be dropped completely. It's just that I think there's no point in us having getting somebody in from law enforcement to clarify what their wish list is, and then for those clarifications not to be recorded and collected somewhere, because otherwise, if you move this document somewhere else afterwards, we're going to end up having the same conversation again in 6 months' time.
So is the answer then it's a high priority, but clarified to the extent that what they're really talking about is information in relation to the business carried on by a registrar?
Well, in terms of the priority, I don't really have any opinion either one way or the other.
Okay.
Because but the thing is, I do have a very strong opinion about what is being asked here, because it's going to affect me directly.
Of course.
So, I mean, from a legal perspective, I have locus standi, as far as I'm concerned, in my right to kind of go, hold on a second, you know, clarify exactly what is being asked or what you would like to ask of us. Whether that's high priority or low priority, it's largely irrelevant as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, let me suggest that we mark this as high priority with the modifications that Michaela listed, which are clarifying what's meant by country of operation and narrowing or eliminating item F on the last of the three, so that it only applies to things that are really relevant to the registrar business. Is there any objection to proceeding in that way?
Nope.
And the staff's got that captured, I'm sure, and we'll have that in the notes column for next time.
Sorry, Steve, just one interjection before we move on. I mean, you know, Bobby from the FBI spent a good hour going through a lot of this stuff. Mm. So, I mean, it would seem to me that, you know, that stuff that he mentioned or anything like that, it was a case of where, you know, maybe some extra clarification might be forthcoming or that he's noted or clarified something here, it would be useful if that was recorded somewhere or put into this document, because otherwise, you know, it's fine we get outside experts or various different stakeholder groups to, you know, clarify what exactly they're talking about in these things, but ultimately, it's fine that I know it, it's fine that you know it, that anybody else who's on this call who follows these calls and listens to the MP3s understands where it's at. But ultimately, you're working with a document which somebody's going to be passed to somebody else who may not have had that opportunity. So I just think it's, you know, some stuff should be noted somewhere. That's all.
I think we it will be noted on this point. I think your point's well taken, and maybe we could ask the staff as they go back through this for the next iteration to look back on the notes of our meeting with Bobby and make sure that any points that were seem to be of agreement there would are reflected.
Yes, yeah, Steve, this is Margie. I will go ahead and do that. I'll look at the transcript from that meeting and make sure I pick up those comments in the notes column so we don't have to go over them over and over again.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so now we're on to, I think we're on to 9.5. Which are three different ways of saying that some of the principal officers and directors of the registrar need to be identified and that information needs to be public and to be kept current. Any comments on this and any thoughts about priority? And I'll rely on Michaela if he has any notes about any modifications of the law enforcement people had on their flavor of 9.5, but are there any comments on 9.5? Excuse me.
It's Michaela again.
Hey, go ahead.
That I can collect all the information, all that is fine. One of the things that I can see, though, as a problem moving forward with all of this is publicly display where. publicly list where. I mean, no, I mean, I can fully understand that you're looking for, that people are looking for a level of disclosure, and I don't have any issue with that. I mean, anybody who, you know, look, I'm not hard to find, for Christ's sake. Anybody who has problems finding me, really, you know. and it's the same with certain other people who are involved in this business. We're not particularly hard to find. If you can't find us, well, that's obviously you're not trying too hard. But the thing is this, you know, saying that Roger Circle will be play X, Y, and Z. I mean, where is the Dean publicly displayed? I mean, if I put that up on the front page of our website, then that's ridiculous. Nobody gives a damn. If I put it 5 pages deep into our website, then somebody might say we're trying to hide it. It's just something here about this publicly displaying and publicly listing and all this kind of thing. I can just see it as being something that can cause problems further down the road. I can understand the spirit of it. And I think in some respects, say, for example, what we've done in Ireland with the ISPAI, which is part of EURISPA, the European ISP Association, is that all members of the ISPAI are required to provide a law enforcement contact. And that information is collected centrally and it is given to law enforcement. Because ultimately it's law enforcement who want the contact. It's not Joe Bloggs. It's, you know, Mr. Policeman over in the corner in whichever country. And for them to be able to follow proper procedure anyway, you know, they're going to have to follow a particular process if they're asking us for evidence or whatever. So, I mean, in some respects, maybe it might make more sense that we look at this, if this has looked more a case on the line of, along the lines of this information being made readily available to them through some manner and possibly centralizing. I don't know. I just, all this publicly displaying stuff I can see as ending up causing more problems than it actually solves. Just my random two cents.
Other comments on this point? Cheryl?
Cheryl Houston. I just want to slightly counter. I understand what Michele is saying, and another thing from a registrant's point of view, some level of conformity, level of where should we want to find such information, and it looks to me from Danny Younger and IPC Working Group's comments in 9.5 that they're not looking at it from just a law enforcement contact point of view. And in fact, the law enforcement agencies' comments themselves are talking about display of name of CEO, president, and other responsible officers. Now, some countries, of course, have that as simply, you know, good corporate law, and some countries have and jurisdictions have central repositories where this type of information is held, in inverted commas, in public access. So would it be appropriate, Michele, do you think, to have more of a central repository somehow or somewhere updated and legitimised?
Possibly. I mean, the problem with a lot of these things is that while Danny, unfortunately Danny isn't on the call, so it's a bit unfair to pick at him, but sorry, be that as may, I'll have to pick on him. You know, Danny is saying that he wants registrars to publicly list X, Y, and Z, but ultimately to what end? I mean, for companies that are publicly trading, the information is going to be publicly accessible anyway. So for in the case of, say, I don't know, random large corporation that happens to have a registrar as part of the business, you know, there's a lot of this disclosure, as you already said, Cheryl, is going to be there. Mm. But I'm looking at it in terms of the pragmatics, as in, what are people trying to achieve by this? It's not simply a case of publicly displaying the information and that's it. There's a reason why they want to display it. It's more a case of they want the access to it. At least that's my understanding. Which, of course, doesn't answer your question, but I'm Irish, so I'll always answer questions with another question anyway.
Fair enough. But I would think that a number of us in inverted commas, would think that the matters raised in 9.5 are important. There's certainly the at-large community believe it's essential that these pieces of information on the accessibility for some details on registrars' corporate structure and the details of their principal and officers is, in inverted commas, public somehow, and I think maybe one of the best and most the less challenging ways, and one that gives greater predictability to both the supply and the demand side of this discussion, is if it was held in some form of uniform and central repository, and maybe that's a job for ICAM.
Well, this is Steve. Let me just suggest that we list this as a high priority item, but note that the any requirement for public display would need to be clarified as to where and how.
Sure.
And you know, again, I don't think you know we're not negotiating these provisions now. We're just trying to identify topics. So I think that these are some useful perspectives on this, but I would suggest we proceed on that basis.
I just had a random thought that might simplify this completely. The Internic website already has an individual listing page for each and every registrar.
Yep.
So if that information was published there, would that satisfy what you're looking for?
In my view, yes.
Well, in that case, I mean, maybe another way to deal with this is to say publicly, via, you know, through ICANN or through Internic. I mean, I think that I think that would be certainly, as far as I know, quite satisfactory to the law enforcement people and Danny. It certainly conforms with their proposals, and it certainly conforms with the IPC proposal, which was to be specified to ICANN and kept current.
Oh.
So, yeah. Is there any objection to that?
I mean, it would be, sorry, just to cut across, but I mean, it might be interesting to see what ICANN staff, in particular David, what their views on this are, because, I mean, ultimately, they're the guys who are going to have to enforce this or may have a better understanding of where this is coming from or what people are trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Dave. And thanks, Michaela. I appreciate the lead-in. From contractual compliance perspective, the real issue or challenge is keeping the information current. When the registrar liaison team obtains the initial information as part of the accreditation process, they do deploy a fairly thorough process to collect that information. But then over time, the information becomes stale, outdated, and otherwise, you know, incomplete. And so as a result, I think the IPC has this right that, you know, the challenge here is to get this information in the hands of ICANN on a regular basis so that ICANN can then keep this information current. And then if the recommendation down the road is to make that information available through Internet, you know, so be it. I think that would be, as Steve pointed out, a topic to be negotiated or discussed later.
Okay. Any further comments on this?
No.
Okay. I seem to have, I may have drifted off the, no, here it is. I guess I'm back here. I lost my Adobe for a moment. Let's move ahead then to number 9.6, which is registrar required to provide ICANN with its current registration agreement, if any, and to keep it current. I'm glad to explain the motivation behind this, which is that obviously there are provisions in the RAA now and will be presumably in the future that specify certain things that have to be in the registration agreement between the registrar and the registrant. Most registrars have a standard registration agreement, not all, and most of them, it's relatively accessible because they're trying to sell registrations. But that's not always the case, and for those circumstances where there is not a registration agreement available, I understand the ICANN staff has had some trouble finding it sometimes. So why not make this an explicit requirement that the registrar send a copy of this to ICANN and and if it changes its standard agreement, send a new one. So any comment on 9.6?
Yeah, this is Dave Giza. I'd like to weigh in on this one, Steve.
Hey, Dave. Anybody else? Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, you know, I think this one is particularly important from contractual compliance perspective as well, because we recently conducted an audit of several provisions inside of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, where we had to go out and do our own due diligence in obtaining registration agreements from registrars. As Steve pointed out, you know, many registrars post those agreements on their website, but others do not. And then we found that even some of the agreements that were posted on the websites were not current. And so it created much more complexity. It created much more time-consuming and manual activity for ICANN. And all of that could be eliminated, quite frankly, if there was just a clean, simple obligation on the part of the registrar to provide the current registration agreement, keep it current. When there's an update, just send an updated agreement to ICANN, and we would keep that information in a database, and it would be very manageable as a result.
Okay, any further comments on this point?
From a registrant point of view, I would think it's particularly important because it will allow the registrant to be able to say, well, what's in the agreement, and be able to go back to a current agreement to actually understand rights and responsibilities of both parties.
All right, any further comments? And I think Dave indicated he thought this would be a high priority from a compliance perspective. Is there any objection to listing this as a high priority item?
I agree.
Okay. All right, then we're done with Section 9. And we'll move right along into Section 10. The first point here, 10.1, is require uniformity in grace periods. There's a cross-reference here to RAA provision dealing with the grace period for the auto-renew grace period.
Yep.
And I think that's what is basically referenced there. So let's open it up for discussion on we're now shifting gears from a lot of these disclosure issues to the Section 10, business dealings with registered name holders, is really the content of the registration agreement or of the way the registrar deals with the registrant. So let's open discussion on 10.1. I see Siva has his hand up and Michaela. So Siva, go ahead.
Saying uniformity among registrars on this point, we can say that there should be a minimum grace period agreed upon by all registrars. And then if one of the registrars wants to offer a higher grace period on his own, then it should be possible for him. So let's change the uniformity to a minimum grace period.
Okay. I could barely understand every third word that you said. Could you possibly type a synopsis of what you said to us, please? Because I found that impossible.
I think what Siva said was that rather than a uniform grace period, the stress should be on a minimum grace period, that they could have a longer one, but there should be a minimum established in the RAA. Is that correct, Siva?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. So, let's see, I have, thank you, Siva. Michaela, you had a comment. Does anybody else want to speak? If not, Michaela, go ahead.
This is currently being discussed to death in PDNR.
Oh, you're psychic, aren't you, Michaela?
It's just because we're on the same bloody working group, Cyril. The problem with grace periods, unfortunately, does not rest solely with the registrars, which, by the way, I love saying. It's also something that involves the registry operators. So it's just worth commenting that, you know, while you may want to make changes to this, several sacred cows may need to be sacrificed for that to happen.
Okay, I'm not sure whether you're saying this is a complex topic that involves a lot of interest, which I certainly accept, or whether you're saying it's something that shouldn't be an RAA amendment because it's being discussed in another group. I wasn't clear on that.
Both. Just to make sure, just both. I mean, it's an incredibly complex area, which has been, I don't know, I'll leave Cheryl make a comment. I think she's on the same, dealing with it as well.
Thank you, Michele. And we have to stop cooperating. We're really ruining our reputations here. The other thing, I suppose, too, is we don't want things to fall through the crack. We don't want the PENDR work group to assume that any recognition of RAA amendment changes will be picked up by this group and them not attach it. So seeing as Michele and I are going to stop this call and go straight into the next PENDR work group call, can he and I take on a action item to clarify with the other GNSO work group on the PENDR exactly what its understanding and expectations are of this work group to deal with or not in any way, shape or form this issue?
That strikes me as an excellent suggestion. Is there any comment on that?
I agree with Cheryl.
Okay. In that case, we will list clarify with PENDR in the notes column, and we'll come back to that. You guys, one of you will report back to us as to the
Michele will.
I'll let you fight that out. Okay.
Cheryl, you will be getting a rude wave from me shortly.
Okay, moving right along to item 10.2. Direct transfer clauses, and I think this is in reference to a provision in the registrar agreement that would, at the expiration of your registration period, you transfer it to the registrar or to a third registrar-associated third party. So I think Danny is suggesting that this should be a prohibited clause in the registrar agreement. The registrar shouldn't be allowed to require this. So. I'll open the floor to discussion on item 10.2. Any comments on this?
I have one, I suppose.
Okay, go ahead.
This is one of the things that has come up in the post-expiry. Now, my personal take, and this is purely my own personal take, and obviously I can't speak for anybody else on this. I think a lot of the problem, or the perceived problem here, is when it's not made clear to the registrant what's going to happen to the domain post-expiry. The removing the clause or not removing the clause isn't really the issue. The issue is more a case of transparency with regard to the post-expiry process and procedure and everything.
Well, that's not quite how I read this suggestion. It's not saying you have to disclose what your policy is. It says your policy cannot be this. It cannot be on expiry the name automatically goes back to the registrar. It should go into the pool. I think that's what Danny's proposing.
No, I can say with all due respect, I can read exactly what Danny has said and I understand exactly what he's saying, but based on the very lengthy conversations we've had surrounding this kind of topic, the root cause would appear to be why this is causing people headaches and why people have an issue with it is because they're not aware of what happens to the domain, if you follow me.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, I think you wanted to be recognized.
I only in support of what Michele is saying, it certainly appears in the extensive discussions we've had in PENDR that the registrant's frustration is directly and concern over things like this is directly correlated with their understanding of what is licensing versus what is ownership and what is their rights and responsibilities. And there is a rather murky requirement, but one that we're I think clarifying at the moment, where understanding of exactly what it is you have contracted for what period, and what it is you need to know about might happen should you fail to do certain things by certain landmark times, will basically make this for most people, not all people, we can't keep everybody happy, but for most people, far more satisfied than appears to be the case now.
But I repeat the question. Clarification is one thing. Is this not simply a requirement to say, look, what has to happen is it has to go into a pool? Isn't that what Danny's saying? And clarification is simply, well, A, it doesn't go into a pool, B, it does go into a pool, whereas what Danny's saying is, well, one of those options shouldn't be available.
Well, understand what Danny's saying. Danny
yeah.
is speaking in Danny's voice. What I'm
sure.
making clear is the considered opinions of many voices in discussion in another work group.
Okay, so is Cheryl, is this another topic that would be appropriate for you to go to the PNDR and ask what their expectations are, or are you saying this shouldn't be dealt with here?
I wrote this is a ditto to 10.1, in my opinion, that's exactly what I meant.
Okay. All right. So let me ask whether...
Michele still has his hand up, and I jumped in, albeit by invitation.
Well, I mean, I would just add one thing to this. And I mean, it's just based on the experience in, say, for example, COUK. Within the COUK CCTLD, a registrar cannot take over a domain name directly in the manner that is possible currently with a GTLD.
Okay.
So one might think, logically, that it isn't an issue. What concerns Danny is a non-issue. The reality is that people and companies, organizations, in some cases they are individuals, will basically achieve the same results by simply snapping the domains as they drop. So, realistically speaking, putting in a clause there won't actually solve the problem that he's trying to solve.
Mm-hmm.
All it'll do is it'll just move the problem to somewhere else.
Okay, and so what I'm understanding is it's not only it's through clarification the problem will be solved?
Well, it won't be solved for everybody because no matter how many times you clarify something,
okay.
I'll put it this way. You drive on, what side of the road do you drive on? It doesn't matter if you're driving the right or the left. If you hang around on near motorways for long enough, you will still see people driving up the motorway the wrong way.
Okay.
Not for long.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
And there are
consequences
to that.
I think that's a self-correcting problem, actually.
Yeah. Okay, but let's. I see Paul had his hand up, and I just want to call everyone's attention to Siva's comments in the chat, because I know we have a little trouble hearing him, but his comments are in the chat box, so please take a look at that. Paul, you had a comment?
Yes, thanks, Steve. Question for the group. I'm part of the other team. I'm subbing, filling in for Staten today. Wasn't available. And the other team where we're ironically looking to this team to provide the list of all things, it's kind of chicken and egg situation. But one question I just have and trying to have legs in both feet right now is this particular proposal, 10.2, coming from Mr. Younger. Is this group considering by what right, or right's the wrong word, but by what authority is, are any of these recommendations potentially taking away an existing service that's in the marketplace? And more importantly, what is not at all reflected in Danny's comment is that not all registrars have these sorts of clauses. And in many cases, and I'll use my own registrar network solution as an example, we very explicitly make it very clear to registrants, to our customers, if they want to opt out of having their name go through an auction process at the end, they can do that, and we will drop the name for them. We will respect their wish and drop the name. So, you know, it seems like a very draconian measure, just do away with this particular ability when it will impact existing business interests and it will sort of take away a competitive differentiator that exists among some registrars as well. And I'm just left wondering, okay, there's a lot of good stuff, and as Siva's mentioning, you know, PNDR can discuss it and whatnot. In that other group, we often bring back the idea, but what about the market dynamics, the effects? Don't make policy in a vacuum. How will it impact what's going on in the marketplace? And the importance that often exists, that a lot of the things that are done or not done often serve as a way to distinguish one registrar from another.
Well, let me just respond, because since you haven't been in these discussions, just to remind everyone that we're not really debating the merits of these provisions. We're trying to identify topics that were brought to us as high or low priority, or if they're unclear, then that's another point. But I think this one is reasonably clear. But I think we have a suggestion from Cheryl that we asked this other working group, are they handling this issue? And to me, that's kind of a question under our task too, which is to identify any points on which there's a potential consensus policy issue, because I assume that's what that working group is working toward. So I guess I'd like to get back to whether people are okay with doing a ditto on this, as we did on 10.1, and asking Cheryl and Michaela to come back to us with a report from that other working group, or do we feel that there should be some other, that this should be assigned a different priority? Those are our options, I think. Any comments on that? Okay, well, I see Siva's comment that this is he feels this is a proper topic for the RAA amendments, and I have some sympathy for that view. So, but let us, I don't think it'll hold us up too long if we ask Cheryl and Michaela to let us know what, if they can bring this up in the other working group, and let us know what reaction there is, and then we can proceed accordingly. Okay, moving on to 10.3, privacy and security of registrant records. There's three related proposals from the staff about requiring registrars to notify ICANN and, in some cases, registrants about security breaches. Are there comments on what priority we should assign to those proposals? Cheryl, you wanted to speak. I don't know if anyone from the staff has any comments they want to offer too, but Cheryl, why don't you go ahead?
I feel this is a very high priority, and I'm speaking with absolute bias from CCTLD experience, where it's only the existence of a similar clause that has allowed us to act in the best interests of our registrants and to protect very sensitive security and credit card information.
Okay. Vote for high priority. I think Siva has his hand up. Anybody else? Dave Giza. So Siva, go ahead if you wanted to speak.
We can't expect all registrars to have a perfect computer system, perfect security arrangements for the data that they have. So one solution for this is to ask all registrars to store data in a central server, central ICANN server, which can act as a cloud for registrars to access data from. all the registrant data can be with ICANN in a secure house, and so that will take care of the problem of possible breach.
Okay, so Steve, if I understand it, you're suggesting that registrars would not store any data, but they would put it in a central repository. Because we already have escrow requirements where they have to put some information in a central repository. They have to escrow certain information, but this is separate from that.
My suggestion is to store all data, all registration data in a central cloud.
Okay.
And in such a way that the particular registrant data is accessible only by that particular registrar, but for the purpose of safety and security, the data is stored in a central cloud.
Okay. Thank you. David?
Could you repeat that? Thanks.
I think Siva was saying that all the data collected by registrars should be stored in a central repository with adequate security, and that would mean that would eliminate the risk of security breaches of data that is held by the registrar.
I take a deep breath every time I hear central repository of data and security. I get very frightened because that becomes even more of a privacy threat.
Okay, I think Dave was the next in the queue.
Yep. Thank you, Steve. Steve, this is a particularly high priority item for ICANN. And I've discussed this one with Greg Rattray as part of our security initiatives, you know, going forward. And so, I would recommend to the group that we keep this as a high priority item because security breaches with respect to any portion of a registrar system can, and in many cases will, impact registrants as well as ICANN. And so I think the idea here is to find that, you know, eventually when it's time to negotiate, to find that reasonable ground with registrars in terms of how registrars, you know, will notify ICANN of security breaches, and then provide some reassurance. Registrar provides some reassurance that that reasonable steps will be taken, to prevent further unauthorized access to their accounts. And I do believe registrars can do that. So again, I would put this as a high priority item.
Okay, thank you, Michaela. And then let's try to wrap up on this point.
I think there's been a couple of ESSAC reports and documents over the last 12 to 18 months. Some other people on the call may recall, with regard to security and everything else. And I think, I could be completely wrong, Steve Crocker addressed that at one of the meetings recently, and there was some discussion about coming up with some baseline security standards that could be applied.
Yep.
And I think that's all a move in the right direction. Ultimately, most of us are processing credit cards, so therefore we would have to be PCI DSS compliant at one level or another. I'm sorry, but I have to completely reject any suggestions for a centralized deposit of customer data. Not going to happen. Anybody who suggests that, forget it. That's absolutely insane. You put it all in one place, so then you've got giving everybody one central place to attack. I fail to see the logic behind that. Demanding high levels of security from registrars, I don't have any issue with that whatsoever. Centralized deposit, not going to happen. I'll tear up my RAA, and I'll go back to teaching languages. There's no way I'd do it. No way.
I'd support that as well. Central repository is a very scary thing from a privacy perspective, and I think security is one half of it, and then a report when security doesn't work is the other half, and I think we're on the other half, which is you should in some way report breaches of your own data, which I cannot imagine anybody would be comfortable putting into a central repository.
Okay, Dave and Cheryl, and I just call your attention to Siva had some responses in the chat window. But Dave and Cheryl, Dave first.
Yep. Thank you, Steve. 2 points here. Number one, I completely agree with Michaela on this issue, and staff is not advocating for a central repository for this information. I think many of you know that we have a registrar data escrow program in place right now in order to protect registrants if a registrar goes out of business. So, I feel fairly confident that program is working well and it will serve that intended purpose.
Okay, thank you. Cheryl, then we'll wrap up on
this. Thank you, and thank you, Dave. Perfect segue to what I was going to say, Dave. I was saying that the escrow and repository issues, as they are built to protect from loss, important registrant information is entirely different to the requirement and a highly mandated requirement to keep any breach of established and agreed security without it having a instantaneous reporting or reporting within X number of hours of it being aware of it. I think it's very important that it's a high priority, and it's something that we're going to have a lot more discussion of, but I think we're starting to mix apples and oranges.
Okay, so my conclusion from this discussion is that this is a high priority item, 10.3, and we will move on to 10.4. This is basically... Right now, the registrar has the ability to cancel a registration for a breach of certain provisions in 3.7.7. This would make that mandatory after providing appropriate notice. And I'll just to give an example, because the citation may not be that meaningful. 3.7.7.2 says that if the registered name holder willfully provides inaccurate or unreliable whois information, if it willfully fails to update its information, or it doesn't respond for 15 days to an inquiry from registrar about the accuracy of contact details, that constitutes a material breach of the contract and can be a basis for registered name cancellation. That's the current, in fact, that's been in the RAA since the beginning, and This proposal is directed to making that mandatory under certain circumstances, rather than just leaving it up to the registrar. So, I think from the IPC perspective, this is an important issue and one that we think should have high priority. I know there have been some registrar advisories that have been issued about circumstances under which ICANN encourages registrars to cancel registrations, but this would bring it into the RAA itself as a mandatory provision. So I'll open the floor to any comments on this. Dave?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. For the benefit of the working group, I just wanted you to be aware that we recently performed a Section 3773 audit. And as Steve pointed out, many registrars fail to incorporate all of the provisions of 377, 1 through 5 in their registration agreements. And I do believe that sometimes that's just oversight on the part of registrars. But this would be a very instructive and, I think, efficient way to make sure that those provisions in the RAA under 3773 literally become, mirror-imaged in a registration agreement, thereby providing the kind of clarity that would help registrars and, I believe, registrants. So, therefore, I think this ought to be a high priority item.
Thank you. Holly?
Yeah, I think the way that the way you explained it made a lot more sense. The summary simply seems to indicate a very much broader obligation to terminate if they're in breach. So the way that you read 3.7.7.2, which is essentially if the registrant has given incorrect information and they have been approached and they have not responded and so forth, then yes, maybe termination. I guess my suggestion would be to tighten up the language so it's very clear what we're talking about is registrant inability to provide the correct information, recognizing that there may be circumstances which, in fact, the registrant can't be. There may be circumstances in which this isn't something that should necessarily lead to breach, but the way that the 3.7.7.2 is worded is probably a little bit better and more exact.
Okay, thank you. Michaela, did you have your hand up?
Sorry, I was just taking myself off mute and my phone wasn't cooperating. The way that, for example, in .eu that this is handled is nice in that if there is a perceived breach, in of the registrant data or whatever, that they have a chance to rectify that. If they don't rectify it within a timely fashion, the domain name is suspended or deleted or whatever. I mean, I just think it is important, though, that you do allow people an opportunity to rectify a breach if they've, because it, sometimes it just happens by accident. I mean, you know, people are humans, and sometimes people will make screw ups, or a domain transfer can lead to all sorts of weird data being pulled across. And of course, if you have an overly, I'll use the word, damn it, rabid trademark attorney who will choose that one period of time when the registrant data is not 100% compliant, and I use compliant between large inverted commas, I'm doing the fingers thing here, then I don't think that is not reasonable, and would also cause other issues both for the registrar, the registry, and ICANN if it were enforced too bluntly. I mean, I'm amazed in some cases that some of these, that ICANN hasn't been sued, and that not registrars haven't been sued left, right, and centre for some of these things. I mean, just, you know, you have to be reasonable as well. Just because some people are evil doesn't mean that everybody is.
Okay, Paul? And then we're going to have to wrap up.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. On this particular question, I wonder, is anybody participating in the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group? Probably not. I ask because I know this particular issue has been addressed by that group. While I'm not part of it, I was asked to do a little research about network solutions experience here, and this question, this suggestion, I should say, that registrars be required to cancel a name is really, I think, kind of problematic. Again, it's an extreme approach in that cancellation is sort of the nuclear option, right? There could be things short of that. And what I found in our research is that there are a lot of cases, some of which are published, a lot of them unfortunately are not, but a lot of cases where over the years Network Solutions has gone and actually taken the step of cancellation, and we've been sued by the registrant. And then we have incurred multi-tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees defending ourselves for following our service agreement, which is you know, crafted in part around requirements coming out of the RAA. And, you know, the long and short of it is that as a registrar, we would much rather have, we really expect to continue to have the ability to make the decision ourselves on how to proceed on a case where there is some alleged or determined abuse or misuse, or if you want to use the term breach in the agreement, but requiring a very strong step like canceling the name is really going to be problematic. And for the group, I think that, you know, we probably want to really think through, do we want to take it as far as is being suggested here, or at least raise the issue that more could be done and, you know, perhaps soften it to...
Okay, Paul, I appreciate you raising this issue. Like your last comment, this is really not appropriate for this group, and I know you have...
Okay, I'm sorry, I keep coming
group.
Back, right.
We're not debating the merits of this or when it shouldn't, you know, the details of when it should or shouldn't apply. We're just trying to identify which are the priority items here for consideration as possible topics for RAA amendments. And I think we heard from Dave that this would be an important area to address. I think there also are concerns about the need to have this, have language, have it drafted tightly, let's put it that way, because not all 3.7.7 breaches are created equal. At least that was my sense from Holly and others here. So,
I'm sorry, I keep forgetting the limits of the scope of the group.
Yeah, I think the staff can capture that, those comments, and we can move on to the next topic. But I see Holly, did you have your hand up again?
Oh no, sorry, don't.
Okay,
no.
Sorry. Okay, well, we've kind of reached the end of our time here, we do now have a timetable, but I think it is going to require us to be pretty disciplined about, again, trying to stick to setting priorities or prioritizing proposals and identifying any consensus policy issues. Otherwise, I don't think we're going to be able to keep to that timetable. So let's try to do that. Remember, we still have several items that are open for discussion on the list dealing with sections 5 through 8 of this chart. I'm sure Margie will update the chart to reflect what we went, or the staff will update the chart to reflect what we got through today. We will send out a doodle poll for the week after next, so the week of February 8th, and we'll try to set a time for our next call then. And are there any last comments that people want to make before we adjourn?
Yeah, just one note. 10.5 seems to be absorbed in the way that 10.1 came out, because it seems to raise much the same issue. Can we just consider that 10.5 is part of the action items on 10.1?
I'm happy to do that, subject to Cheryl or Michaela telling us that it's not appropriate.
No,
it seems to be.
I agree 100%, and in fact it was a point I was planning to make. So
okay.
I think 10.5, 10.1, and 10.2 we'll get back to you on.
Terrific. And so thank you, Holly. That means we've gotten through entirely through Section 10, and so we can start fresh on Section 11 when we reconvene in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, bye. Bye now.
Bye.